One Technique. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
713-780 ESPN is Pena a superstar. Katie, before I got here, no Blank, no Branham. What will the two grumpy old men in the morning complain about tomorrow morning? Dang, shots fired, Katie. I didn't say it. I just repeated it, and I'm happy he said it. 713-780 ESPN is Jeremy Pena a superstar. Lamont on Twitter. Pena's not even a star. In the city of Houston, you have to at least have a nickname that Houston has given you to be a superstar or star. That's an interesting barometer, but yeah, Pena doesn't have one. I guess, doesn't McTaggart call him something like the storm is coming? Does he call him? I think he does. I think he calls it like when he hits a home run or something. I think McTaggart might have something for him.
Paul sings 713.
What's that?
Paul sings about Jeremy Pena.
Yeah, he did that with me first, though. Like, so Paul lost credibility with the song because he once did it with me, and then when a better Jeremy came along, he just switched over to that Jeremy. Paul's kind of acting like Altuve a little bit.
Oh, he's a front-runner.
713-780. No, he just kind of, you know, does it with everybody.
Now, Baseball Reference does have a nickname listed for Jeremy Pena. Do you guys have any guesses what it is?
No.
Is it in Spanish?
It is.
I think it's the, isn't it like La Tormenta?
You're exactly right.
I think that's what McTaggart says when he hits a home run.
Okay.
I think he tweets La Tormenta, or the storm is coming, which I think it means that's that in Spanish. So let's go out to the HRP listener line. Israel, you're in the Hive. What's up, Israel?
What up, man? Now, come on, bro. If you are the World Series MVP, if you are the ALS the MVP, that's the pinnacle. What more did you want? That means that he comes through in the clutch. I don't care if due to season you did whatever, you know, he batted 330, but a guy in the regular season can't come through in the clutch. He's a star.
And I hear you.
A star. And who else did what he did?
Can I ask you a question real
sure.
quick? Do you think Steve Pierce is a superstar?
We talking about Pena. I think Pena is one.
Oh, I thought we were talking about World Series MVPs.
Well, I don't even know the guy you're talking about. I'm talking about
That's my point. Do you think David Freese is a superstar? Do you think Ben Zobrist is a superstar?
Pena is a star, bro. He came through. He got the chip.
Is Mike Lowell a superstar?
And where you could do that? He's going to be cemented in
David Eckstein
history forever. All right,
Scott
man.
Brocious.
That's why I think they're two different
orders.
They're two different things.
Jose Rijo.
Jeremy's definitely reading off of Daryl Wikipedia right
Porter.
Now.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Steve Yeager.
Yeah, I can see him reading.
It's a great
Gene Tennis.
But it doesn't mean you're a superstar.
No. I think Jeremy
Ralph
made his
Terry,
point.
When, Larry Sherry, Lou Burdett, Johnny Podras.
Whenever Jeremy said the first name, I don't even remember who it was, and Israel responded with, I don't know who that is. Well, that's kind of the point. Those guys are World Series MVPs, and we don't know who they are.
You can win, and I get your point, Israel, and I think it's a good point, and I think it's the best point if you're arguing the side of Jeremy Pena being a superstar. So I do respect that. Like if I were arguing that Pena is a superstar, I would lead with that too. So I do think that is the best case if you're making it for Jeremy Pena being a star. So I totally understand where you're coming from. It's just a difference of opinion. I don't think that the barometer of being a superstar is winning your sports championship MVP. And I get the clutch factor, and that you're right. You have to be clutch in order to win that, and you lift your team to probably a championship. But is that your 15 minutes of fame? Did you get hot for a week and a half? Does that equate being a superstar? I think it's pretty obvious that it's a hard no on that.
Yeah, and I think you also looked at just dollars. If you think about superstars, I mean, you wouldn't pay him more than anywhere close to what you pay, what the Phillies are paying Trey Turner or what the Royals are paying Bobby Witt. I mean, are you paying him $26 million? That's what Dansby Swanson got.
Well, and it's not
just
early. It's not even just performance, though. To me, the connotation or the meaning behind superstar also implies box office. Someone who's bringing in, you know, viewers on TV. Someone who's putting butts in seats inside the stadium. So, I mean, is anyone tuning in on a Tuesday night because of Jeremy Pena?
The ladies are.
Like, if they're putting up the graphic.
That's not true.
if Apple TV's putting up the graphic for the game on Friday, I mean, is Jeremy Pena on the graphic? No, it's going to be Yordan. It's going to be, you know, Fromber, Jose Altuve. It's going to be those guys. He's not a superstar.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. And it's probably why this conversation's like a fun one, and you're going to get a lot of different opinions, is because like the tier that we're saying, superstar, is really relative. Like how people view a superstar is different for everybody. Like you in box office, I think it's a level of production, maybe some star attached to that as well. So like you throw out this relative term that can really change based on who you're talking to, and then you have a guy who has had a high level of success in a marquee moment, then it's like, okay, well, yeah, for me, I think he's a superstar, where others, and probably the overwhelming opinion of this, that he's not. Texter, Pena's a star here in Houston, but if he went to Seattle, no one would know who he is. See, does that qualify superstar, though?
No,
that
I think
you're
it's
a local name?
He's a likable player.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like,
yeah.
Superstar and star, what's your list right now? Altuve? Alvarez?
That Fromber? That might be it. I mean, Fromber is kind of borderline because he doesn't have the cachet.
I don't know if Fromber's a superstar.
Hunter Brown?
No, he's not a superstar.
Yet. Josh Hader?
Not yet.
No.
Fromber, meh.
Oh,
it,
yeah,
like,
Josh
if you want to, if you want to qualify by position, then Hader might be. Fromber doesn't have the sizzle, quite frankly. Like, yeah, we know here and he has like a little bit of swagger, but nationally he's kind of a boring name. There's not a whole lot of baseball superstars. Part of it's because baseball does a terrible job of marketing its players.
It's a reasonable sport in a lot of ways.
It 100% is. If your only other claim to fame is Takeri Hernandez, you're not a star. Oh, that's from Ocho. That's not true. If your only claim to fame is Takeri Hernandez, you're a hero, quite frankly. Ask Punk Paul, is he a star? I wonder if he's talking about Gallant. In his young age, he's already an Astros legend, not a star. That might be the best way to put it. And that's kind of like backs up Israel's point. Like to me, Israel, and again, they were good points. I think Israel's more arguing Astros lore than superstar per se. Because I would agree, he is an Astros legend. You win the World Series MVP, you're a legend. You live in Astro lore. But I put you in superstar range.
I don't know, man. I know he won the
trophy. It's definitely in lore.
He won the trophy, but like when you
Bucky think... Dent is in lore for one critical. Chris Burke's in Astro lore. He had a walk-off homer in the 18th and was a bust as a first rounder.
Pena
100% lives in Astro lore.
I know he's got a trophy, man, but like if you go top moments of the World Series, he ain't top two. I mean, it's Javier and the no-hitter, and it's Yordan.
It's Chaz.
Like, it's Chaz. Like,
but he had a big series.
I know
he had
a
big series.
Like,
and he had a big playoff. He didn't, like, you have to go beyond just the World Series.
But
now I'm arguing for Pena.
I mean, his biggest singular moment was in the DS.
Yeah. But, like, you think about moments. Like, people think about Yordan Alvarez and Chaz McCormick and the no-hitter. Like, yes, he
if
won
you
the
don't think
hardware.
You don't think he lives in Astros lore?
I think people
I'm
will,
taking crazy
people
pills.
People will remember the Yordan Alvarez home run for the rest of their lives.
But they will remember that Jeremy Pena was the World Series MVP for the rest of their lives. They'll remember he was the ALCS MVP for the rest of their lives. They'll remember the 18th inning home run against Seattle for the rest of their lives. Jeremy Pena 100% lives in Astro lore, but he's not a superstar.
Yeah. But like even then, like it's like, what is he?
We're so splitting hairs.
Yeah, we are.
I have to stop short of superstar.
I've missed this, Jeremy.
Texter, the bench equals superstars. The killer bees equal not superstars. Yeah, what's your point? They're Hall of Famers. We're just cutting our teeth. Texter, superstars are Altuve and Yordan. Fromber, Hader, and Yiner are stars. That's probably fair. Like Yiner might not even be in star category yet. Maybe he's a year away. Texter, Pena is mid AF. He's a home star only. Pena is not a superstar. If Pena is a superstar, then John and Lance are Hall of Famers. Wait, don't be mean to John and Lance. We're not going to read texts that are mean to John and Lance on the air. 713-780-3776. You got Branhamed, bunch of guys with backward hat busting and point and laugh. It sounds like we should do this, like as a social media bit. Like instead of being punked, you get Branhamed.
When you engage,
like, this is gold.
When you engage, you engage Farman. I can't even say it. Farm engagement. There we go. I reversed it. Jesus. But when you farm engagement and get fan bases like you had Seattle all up in your mentions a couple years ago, that could become a segment. Maybe a will of bits.
Yeah, I think
people taking you the wrong way.
I think it should be a video bit.
Okay. Yeah, I think it would, too.
Yeah. You know, take advantage of your influencers when you got them. He's not a star. Stars don't bat seventh in their lineups. To be fair, he hit second in that playoff. But, yeah, I get your point. Probably five true superstars in the league. Yeah, baseball's bad about that. I do admit that. If Pena never won the World Series MVP, he'd be another Adam Everett. It's not a terrible comp. He probably more power than Everett. Everett was a better defender. But, yeah, same tier, probably. No question, not even a star. He's a solid player. Pena's like Nick Foles, Super Bowl MVP. That's an interesting comp. Interesting comp. Like, you got hot one postseason. But, I mean, Pena's like an everyday starter, whereas Foles was not.
I know. It's like it's almost like that's more like Zobrist. I'm thinking of the names you mentioned, like someone that did it later in their career. Because, like, Nick Foles didn't really accomplish anything in his career. He had, like, one good year in Philly. With Chip Kelly that first year, and then he won the Super Bowl, yes. But, like, he was pretty terrible the rest of his life.
Spank out these texts real quick. Cam Smith will have a better season than Pena in 25. You're the World Series MVP. You're a star. It doesn't get any better than that. Can't say not even close to a superstar. World Series MVP, ALCS MVP, and still in his 20s. What's close to a superstar than if Pena isn't close? Because it's been very mediocre in the regular season. Astros are willing to move on from the old guard because he should be entering his prime. I don't think they moved on to the old guard because they have Jeremy Pena on their team. Keith from LA, I bet the texter thinks Flacco's a superstar. I don't know if Pena's top 50% shortstop in the league. I'm not too sure the Astros have a superstar on this team right now. Yordan for sure. Altuve, maybe he's hanging on to his stardom. Hashtag Pena is barely average. If Pena turns into a superstar this year, will you retract? Yeah, I will. Absolutely. He's currently not a star. Could he become a star if he wins the MVP in the regular season this year? Yeah. And I would say that he turned into a star. Can you be a star being fifth in the area? We can't get to all these texts. Sorry. Todd Callis on the other side, voice of the Houston Astros, joins us next. It is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.
Houston is all systems go. We love our Astros in Houston and all across the Lone Star State.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Texter 1317, the answer to your question is yes. 1317, yes. Let's go out to the HRMP guest line, being joined by the TV voice of the Astros, Todd Callis. Today's interview with TK brought to you by Pipe Fitters, Local 211. They do it right. Todd, how was the off-season spring training? How did you enjoy your time off before you had to go down to West Palm Beach? Things well?
Everything's good. At this time of year, kind of you wait and wait and wait, and then it jumps on you in a hurry, and here we are ready to go in less than 24 hours. So, yeah, good off season. Did some traveling, spent some good quality time here in H-Town, got out of the links a few times. So I'm ready to go. I'm ready to be busy for the next 7 or 8 months.
When in the off season did you think Cam Smith would be in right field?
That's a good question. I want to ask Dana Brown that question tomorrow on our broadcast, when he thought he was going to make the team. I mean, when he started out the spring and he walked his first two times on his 22nd birthday, showing me, like, he's not trying to do too much. He's not trying to over-impress the new team or new staff here. He just was within himself that first game. So he walks two times, and the next game he gets in, like, the sixth inning and hits two home runs. I'm like, all right, this could be somebody special. Even at that point, you're like, it's still going to be a long shot. And it wasn't until he started playing right field and playing right field well that I thought, all right, this is a real possibility now. He didn't really have a place to play on the infield. It didn't appear they weren't going to move Isak Paredes up to third. So it looked like right field was his only option. So once he started playing right field well, then I'm like, this could really happen. And good for the kid. I mean, he did everything right this spring. In addition to being a great talent, he's a great kid. He's a great person. I can't wait to see how things go for him beginning tomorrow.
Todd Kalish joining us on the HRNP guest line. The Astros are not in a spot where they had to be desperate to get Cam Smith up. And Dana Brown and his staff and Joe Espada, they wouldn't call him up if they didn't think he could handle it. I absolutely 100% believe that. But what are the concerns of calling up a player who has five games, 20 plate appearances above high A ball?
So, Dana Brown always pushes his guys. He's always been known to be an aggressive GM, or before that, even when he was director of player ops, director of the minor leagues, he's always pushed guys beyond their comfort zone. He just wants to challenge what he thinks are the best talents to see what they can do. He was telling us a story in spring training about how when he was early in his career, he was in Toronto and Alex Anthopoulos was the GM, and he told Anthopoulos, he wants Miguel Castro and Roberto Osuna on the team. He's like, you got to put them on the team, and they've got to be your eighth and ninth inning guys. And Anthopoulos wasn't sure because they were both 20 years old at the time. Sure enough, those guys were on the team and were doing well at the back end of the Blue Jays bullpen that year. And so he's always pushed guys. There's never really, to me, even if, and I don't anticipate this happening, but even if Cam Smith goes out and for 6 weeks hits 150 and has an OPS around 400 and gets sent down, it's still not the end of the world. And I'm not projecting that, believe me. I'm just saying it, we saw it with Tucker in 2018, I guess, was the first year he came up. And then he wasn't up again. He went down twice in 18, and he wasn't up again until late in 19. And Kyle Tucker's life and his baseball career has turned out pretty well. So to me, there's really no downside. If you're a really good talent and you have a really good head on your shoulders, which I think Cam does, then even if he is met with failure at the beginning of his career, he's still going to be okay. But I don't anticipate that happening.
Todd, as surprising as it is that obviously Cam Smith is in right field, I still feel a sense of shock that we're going to see a lot of Jose Altuve in left field this season. What's it been like watching that transition in the spring for you?
It's been a mixed bag, I'll be honest. There's been some really good and some not so good. And I think Altuve had a lot of chances to try and test a lot of different areas in left field in spring training. So what I saw, which was really good, was him going back on balls, on fly balls, and it didn't look like he was afraid of the wall, and he was going into the left center field gap with great speed. But think about Altuve, even though he's 34 years old, he still runs 30-plus feet per second, which is elite in the major league. So his speed is fine, and he's going to be able to track down fly balls. The balls that gave him trouble, it seemed, were the balls that were slicing from left-handed hitters towards the line, kind of towards his backhand. And then we really didn't get to see him test that arm in the outfield. That'll be something that has to play during the course of the season as well. But he seems to really, really like it. Like, Altuve's not just out there like, all right, now I have to play left field to help the team out. He really, really enjoys being a left fielder now, to the point where we're going to see him at second base a little bit, but I don't think we're going to see him much there. I think the majority, probably 75% to 80% of the time, he's going to be a left fielder.
I was going to ask you that, so I'm glad that you answered it. So about 75% of the time in left. I wonder if the way that the other offensive players are performing could factor into that decision. Like if DeZinzo's knocking the cover off the baseball in his few spot starts, and whoever's playing second base, you know, isn't carrying their weight offensively. Do you think that could factor into where Altuve's playing, like in July or August?
Oh, no doubt. I don't think there's anything set in stone right now, but I think right now the plan is it could be more than 75%. I'm just using that as a possibility. I think it could be as much as 90% or 95%. But I think it's going to be at least 75% in left. But you're right. If Brendan Rodgers and Mauricio Dubon are not hitting or not, you know, stepping up their game defensively at second base, Altuve's numbers are what they are defensively, and we have watched it over the last few years. It's an upgrade on the infield when you have Dubon at second base or Brendan Rodgers at second base. And when you have Robert Valdez and Hunter Brown as your two key pitchers in your rotation, they're going to get a lot of ground balls. And so you need to have a stellar infield defense. You've got a huge upgrade at first base, and Rodgers or Dubon is going to be an upgrade at second base. So I really see this being the formula for the Astros in 2025. For now, things can change. You know, Cam Smith might not work out in right field. I don't think that's going to happen. Jose Altuve might decide he wants to go back to second base. I don't think that's going to happen. So right now, I'd say get used to, if you're sitting in the Crawford boxes, get used to having 27 out there with you.
What's it been like seeing Isak Paredes? What are your expectations for him replacing Alex Bregman this year?
Really, really good hands. Really good hands. Like, better than I even thought. The range is not going to be quite as good as Alex Bregman's, but that's why Alex won a Gold Glove. He's not going to get anything that's hit within his range. And it's, like I said, his range is not going to be as good as Alex's, but it's still very solid. He's going to be a really better than average player at third base. I was really impressed with him defensively. And then offensively, you know the stats. We probably gave it to you three or four times during the spring about how he saw more pitches than anybody else in baseball last year per plate appearance. That's going to be huge for so many reasons. Number one, it helps out get pitches on a pitcher. The opposing pitcher may go fewer innings because of that. Number two, and this is the biggest thing, is Yordan Alvarez is a guy. Whenever you watch Yordan in the on-deck circle, he's never in the on-deck circle. He's always 5 to 10 feet closer to home plate. And for Yordan, he's trying to time up the pitcher. He's trying to look for visual cues from a pitcher. And so many times when Altuve is batting first and Yordan was batting second, Altuve put more first pitches into play last year than anybody in baseball. So Yordan a lot of times would come in from left field or come in from the dugout if he was DHing, and he would see one pitch, and then he would be up to the plate. Now, with Altuve in front of him and Isak Paredes, he's going to see anywhere from 5 to 10 pitches before he digs into the batter's box. So that's going to be a huge advantage, I think, for the big man.
That's a great point. Yeah, I always fight that Yordan should bat fourth because I'm kind of old school and people called me a boomer and all of that. But that's a great point. He's going to be able to have a little bit more time before he has to come up, and you still get that at bat in the first inning. Todd Kalish joining us on the HRNP guest line. We were just having this conversation. Jeremy Pena, really good player. Jose Altuve called Cam Smith the future superstar. I hope he's right. Also mentioned it about Pena, so it's been a topic of conversation on our show today. Where do you think Jeremy Pena stacks up with the superstar label? Do you think he's there yet?
No, I don't. I think he can be, but I don't think he's there yet. Very good defensive player, probably close to superstar level defensively, but offensively just has not been consistent enough to be called a superstar offensively. But I think this year could be the year where you could call him a star or a superstar. I think, you know, look at that OPS the last 3 years. It's been somewhere between 700 and 715. A lot of that has to do with not drawing a lot of walks. And Jeremy may never be a guy that draws a lot of walks, but this spring, only 3 strikeouts in 45-ish plate appearances, putting the ball in play, really hitting the ball on a line a lot. I really liked what I saw to Jeremy Pena this year. I didn't know Cam Smith at all. So other than Cam Smith, Jeremy Pena to me was the most impressive guy in spring training with how good his at-bats were. So I don't think you can call him a superstar yet, but I think after 2025, you might be able to.
Todd, we spent this whole interview talking about the lineup and position players. Just how do you feel about the rotation going into 2025?
I feel good. I would love it if Spencer Arrighetti and Hunter Brown were more locked into the strike zone the last couple of outings going into the regular season. But as we saw out of Ronel Blanco last night, he had not had a good 4 starts in spring training, and he locked it in. Actually 2 days ago on Monday. He locked it in 2 days ago, and he looks like he's just going to be fine for the regular season. So I expect the same could be for Hunter and Spencer. But, yeah, they both at times were kind of searching for the zone during spring training. Fromber's Fromber. He's going to be fine. He's going to get his, you know, 65% ground ball percentage tomorrow. He's going to be right there with 6 or 7 innings, hopefully, and giving the Astros the lead going into the Abreu and Hader combination. And then, you know, beyond that, I have not seen Hayden Wesneski, believe it or not. I have not seen him in any game live at this point. He didn't pitch in any of our games we did in West Palm Beach, and we did not cover the game last night. We covered the game Monday. He pitched last night. So I'm really curious to see what he looks like live, but everything I've heard about Hayden is positive, and I think this could be a really nice season for him as the number 5 starter. So I'm fine with the rotation. I think everything is built around. To me, the key to this team is not the rotation, is not this 8th and 9th inning guys, even the 7th inning guy, mm-hmm. if Taylor Scott becomes any version of 2024 that we saw. To me, the key is when guys do have 4 or 5 inning starts, bridging that gap between the starter and the 7, 8, 9 guys. That's going to be the key to the season.
Todd, appreciate the time. Looking forward to another yearly installment of TK in the saddle with us. Have a great call tomorrow.
Thank you so much, guys. Looking forward to working with you another year here. We always have fun on these calls. Thanks.
It's Todd Kalas, voice of the Astros, joining us on the HRMP guest line. We paid him to say that, too, though. If we didn't pay him, do you think he'd still say what he said about how much he likes being on with us, Joe?
I think he likes us.
Do you think that he knew you weren't Joel, like no. Glenn Davis didn't realize you weren't Paul?
No,
because just you, Joe.
Because you didn't introduce it that way.
I did tell him right before okay. You guys went on.
No, I don't. He also might have listened to it.
He might not even know who Joel is, though. So, you know, I don't know if he knows who we are. He just those random guys.
No, he's
guys
met you guys where he came
know,
to,
I,
came to
Joe,
Easter
Joe. Joe, don't what? Let the truth get in the way of a good story. What are you doing here?
I'm an honest
have
person,
you ever
Joe.
Done radio before?
I'm honest.
My goodness.
I'm not an engagement farmer like you.
Yeah, how's that bottle that you owe me? How's that looking?
My
goodness, ruining the joke.
It'll be here eventually.
The truth get in the way of a good story. My goodness. Anyways, today's interview with Todd Kalas brought to you by Pipe Fitters, Local 211. They do it right. All right, I'm going to buzzkill some stuff. I gotta buzzkill some stuff. This this Cam Smith Clubhouse Joe Espada thing. I'm going to buzzkill that. What is our honest opinion of that? Was that too much cheese yesterday in the Astros clubhouse? 713-780-3776. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. You know what month it is? It's March. It's only a few more days of March, but it's March. Spring is on the way. Spring is here, let's face it. But it's time for spring savings at Monument Chevrolet. Get over to the dealership, 225 and Beltway 8. It's basically like a suburb of Houston. It's so big, and they have a massive inventory. Monument Chevrolet is the dealer you can trust. They're going to have the right car for you, the right truck for you, the right SUV for you. Transparent, no hassle pricing. Get your car shopping done fast. Don't worry about the stress and anxiety of having to negotiate with a slimy car salesman. They don't have slimy car salesmen at Monument Chevrolet. Employee pricing going on right now, too. So if you're envisioning a new truck, now's the time to do it. Get into a Silverado 1500 today with employee pricing. Pay what they pay on Silverado 1500s. Monument Chevrolet has been serving the Houston area for 50 years, and they've helped generations of families get into vehicles. And these families keep coming back. Why? Because they trust the people at Monument Chevrolet, because they make it easy. They're dealing with somebody they can trust, not that they feel is going to lie to them. It's a family feel. They've had great ownership for those 50 years, friendly atmosphere. They hire great people, and they've built a great culture at Monument Chevrolet. Get a fair deal, a fast, easy transaction without wasting your valuable time in these aggravating, stressful negotiations. There's no tricks, no time wasting. They're not going to hide charges on you. If you've been waiting to upgrade your ride, now is the time to do it with employee pricing going on right now on their Silverado 1500s. Visit them online, monumentchevrolet.com, monumentchevrolet.com, or just go visit them in person. They'd love to see you. 225 and Beltway 8, Monument Chevrolet. Chevrolet, together, let's drive.
Subscribe to ESPN Houston for free on YouTube.
It's the Killer Bees, and I honestly have no idea what's happening next. Could it be the next great big food debate? The biggest Joel rant of all time? Jeremy trolling someone to the point of crying? Or just some actual bees making some honey? Well, let's find out. It's time for the Wheel of Bits.
Oh my goodness, would you look at this? What an enormous spin.
It's time for Buzzkill Branham.
Okay, Buzzkill Branham. Lance might have been right. Houston hates me, or I hate Houston. I was watching this. I didn't get a chance to watch the spot in the clubhouse yesterday because it broke like right when we were doing a show. And I didn't watch the video. Battery Chuck sent it to me because he's very nice and he does that stuff, and I appreciate him doing that. So I was watching it this morning. There are some cringe moments in this. One, I think it's a bit cringy here, Joseph. Two, I think it's a bit cheesy here, Joseph. And there's some good moments, okay. Like the part where his family comes out and like hugs him and that stuff, and he's crying. Like, I'm here for that. Give me the I'm a big emoter. I'm a big believer in emotes. So that part I can have. Like, that's fine. Like, love that for him. It's kind of weird that they're surrounded by people whose job he's taking or whose starting position he's taking. But just watching this, like, Joe Espada, we're not going to play, the sound isn't very good here, but, so Espada starts giving a speech. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did. I did.
So Espada starts giving his speech. The clubhouse is looking at him like what's happening here, man? This is kind of high school-y.
Yeah.
Like, this is kind of weird. Like, this isn't stuff that happens at the professional level where you have a group full of people that are trying to make the roster, by the way, guys who are trying to win starting jobs, and you have Espada going through this whole spiel about how one guy has stood out and one guy's about to make this team for the first time and one guy's going to be my starting right fielder. And then he fakes a phone call.
I think, do I have this number?
And then he fakes that he's on the phone. And then the clubhouse is just like staring at him like bewildered. Like, what's going on here, man? This is awkward. This is really weird. And then Chaz McCormick is in this video. And you could just see Chaz's face like, I'll never be in the starting right fielder again. This was cringy, man. This was kind of corny. Dusty Baker ain't doing this. You think Dusty Baker, who invented the high five, who has armbands and wristbands of himself, you think he's having this cheesy cringe moment and then posting it on Twitter afterwards? This was weird, man.
I think the weirdest part is the fake phone call.
Yeah.
I think that is the part. I forgot because I watched the whole thing. It's 2 minutes.
Like two and a half.
That's why it's awkward.
It's 2:22.
Yeah, it's very long. It's awkward. Like it is. Like I think it's a great. Okay, I like the idea of what they did. I think it was very poor execution.
I'm not even sure I like the idea. Like to
I like
me,
his family like, being there to tell.
No,
him.
No. I think. I'm cool with the family there. I'm cool with the emotion. I have no problem with Cam Smith crying. Like big time moment. The family. They supported you. You had a tough coming up to get where you are. Like it was a journey. It was a grind. I have no problem with the sensitivity. I have no problem with the emotion. I have no problem with the crying. I think it's cool of the Astros to bring his mother there to share this moment with them. But to do this in front of a clubhouse full of 40 guys, where 14 of them aren't even making the team. And one of them specifically, who is literally two chairs down, is taking his starting job, is a bit awkward.
Yeah.
It is awkward.
I think it plays better if it's just in Espada's office. And when Cam walks
privately.
In, his mom is there, his sister or whoever the other girl is there.
I think it's his girlfriend.
Oh, girlfriend. I didn't want to see
the one that he hugs and kisses at the end, Joe, is his girlfriend, not his sister.
I guess I didn't watch the video.
Who do you think he is, Joe?
I guess I didn't watch the video in that close.
What do you
detail.
Think they do in Tallahassee?
I guess I didn't watch it that close in detail.
From Florida, not West Virginia.
There's a lot of ladies there.
He kisses her at the end.
I missed that part.
I wonder, as you pointed out, I'm just moving right past Joe's kissing sister thing. As you pointed out, Chaz being two chairs down.
He's two chairs down.
And obviously,
it's a kiss on the cheek.
All right. You kiss your sister on the cheek?
I don't have a sister. So I don't
know. I have a sister. I've never kissed
She's
her on
also,
the cheek.
Like,
I'm just saying. No.
The closest it could be is a stepsister. Closest it could be is a stepsister. I'm not talking because of the kiss. I'm talking by how she looks.
Fair. Blonde.
Okay.
Pale skin, blonde hair.
Yeah.
That's at best a stepsister. The closest they have. No, they kiss on the lips, Joe. They kiss on the lips. Smack on the lips. Now, it's a little peck. Like, there's no tongue. But, like, that's a. That's not a stepsister kiss.
How much funnier is this video if there's tongue in that kiss?
Not
like, you're
that
saying
much
it's
different.
Cringy. Imagine if that happened. It'd be
not
so
that
much worse.
No. It's a big moment for him. I have no problem with him. I have no problem with the Cam Smith part of this thing. I have no problem with the Cam Smith. Like, I have no problem with him crying, no problem with him hugging, no problem with him kissing his girlfriend, we hope. No, it has been reported that is his girlfriend. That is his girlfriend. I have no problem with any of that.
You think it's
and
the
it
spot?
Had no problem. It's the setting. It's a spot of faking a phone call, dude. And, like, you watch the early, like, 30 seconds where everybody's just sitting in silence, like, what in the world is going on? It is cringy. It is cringe. The first 30 seconds of this video is cringe. Because, like, go rewatch this video, and for the first 30, 40 seconds, just watch the players in the room. Like, there's one dude, like, looking to the camera, like, what are you doing, dude? Like, there's one, like, kind of side-eyeing it, like James Harden did to Matt Bullard that one time. Like, the audience here is looking at Espada, like, what is happening? This is not something that goes on in a big league clubhouse. Dusty ain't doing it. We had a texter saying Dusty ain't doing it. AJ ain't doing it. this was kind of weird. A lot of people are talking about how great this was and all that. And the moment it's in itself is great. But the first 40 seconds is cringy.
I just hope, getting back to Chaz, especially with him two chairs down, obviously Cam Smith didn't know before it happened. We saw his reaction. That's not something he couldn't have faked that reaction if he already knew. I hope Chaz already knew, right? Like, if they're like you think of the opposite side of that, like, okay, you're making this really special over the top moment for the rookie, for the kid, for Cam Smith, but you're also kind of in a public humiliating way telling Chaz you just lost your job. Like, I would hope Joe pulled him aside beforehand. I have no way of knowing if he did or not, but
even like Chaz is the biggest, like, you know, the guy with the most to lose here, right? Because like, okay, we started a spring training, Chaz McCormick's their everyday right fielder. I'm pretty sure we can even go listen to Dana Brown and Joe Espada say how they have Chaz penciled in for right. Like, I'm sure there is like quotes saying that. So fast forward, you know, a month and a half later, and now Chaz has lost his starting job. So he clearly has the most to lose. There's no way that he knew, though. There's no way that he knew. There's no way Chaz knows and can't.
Doesn't that make the moment more cringy, though?
Yes.
If you're publicly telling a guy he lost his job?
So not only are you doing that, not only are you telling a guy that he lost his starting job, but you're also telling, like, two or three players that think they might have a chance to make this roster that they're not making the roster. So not only are you telling a dude that he's not going to be your starting right fielder, well, maybe not two or three. There's probably only one. Like, Zach Short, Brendan Rodgers was like the last roster spot that was up for grabs. So you were basically telling Zach Short that the Houston Astros will not be employing you. The Sugarland Spacers will be employing you. So you told Chaz McCormick in this setting, you're not my starting right fielder, big boy. Go sit on the bench, Chazzy Fizz. And then you're telling Zach Short that he's not a big leaguer while you're telling Cam Smith on this fake phone call to his mom that he is.
I don't think Chaz knew. I just sent
no
you
chance
guys,
he knew.
I just sent you guys a photo that I took of the video, and you see
Yeah,
Chaz.
I just tweeted one, too.
He looks...
He's ticked.
Not thrilled.
He's ticked.
He shouldn't. I mean, look, and you lose your job. It's not. You're not going to be happy. But it's... Yeah, it's awkward. It's very awkward. Joe's kind of cringy.
Not only, yeah, he's kind of cringy, kind of cheesy.
I don't like the cringe that he puts on our name.
This is cringy, man. And, like, on top of this, he just fired two people.
Well, Chaz like, is still on the roster.
Right, but he fired Zach Short. I mean, he's on the roster,
demoted,
but he demoted him. So he, like, I mean, demoted, it, like, means something different in baseball. But he told a guy he's not a starter, and he sent a guy to AAA as he's congratulating another with a fake phone call to his mom. What are we doing here? And, like, I'm going to get flamed. Houston's going to hate me because I'm saying all this stuff. But if I'm a big leaguer, and I have a big league friend. He pitched, like, three innings once and got shelled. But I have a big league friend, and he's like, yeah, that's weird.
What about
so, – That's weird.
I think this is a great point from one of the texters is, what about DiCenzo? He also just made his first opening day roster.
Yeah. Did we call DiCenzo's mother? Now, to be fair, DiCenzo has made his debut.
I know he has, but this is his first opening day roster. That still means a lot for a major baseball player.
That's the third guy you're offending. Of the three people that you're offending the most while you're congratulating Cam Smith with a fake phone call to his mother when she's actually in the hallway, is Chaz McCormick, Zach Short, and Zach DiCenzo in that order. You're offending those people. And you're kind of offending every player that you called up last year for the first time by doing this. Like, why is Cam getting this treatment, but I didn't? Why is, like, Spencer Arrighetti sitting there front row? And, like, eventually Spencer Arrighetti claps. But Spencer Arrighetti's, like, one of the dudes on the couch, like, looking around, like, slumber. Like, what are we doing here? Like, what is this moment all about? And then eventually he's like, yay, because it's awkward. And he's trying to break the awkwardness. So, like, did he get that whenever he made his debut last year?
No.
So, like, it's this. And then on top of this, Joe, on top of this, it's one thing if you do it with the guys. It's one thing if you do it with the players. But then it'd be like, let's blast that out on social in 30 minutes. I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, this makes me – I hate to do it. I hate to do it. This makes me think a little differently of Mocha Joe. This
really?
Makes me think a little – yeah, this is weird, man. Like, what great managers – in fact, let's carry this over to the other side. The Hive has opinions. 713-780-ESPN. But, like, what great manager, what great coach – in the professional level, because you see, like, college coaches give out a scholarship, like, hey, you're a guy who is a manager or whatever. You're going to put you on scholarship. Yay. These are pros. These are professional players. What professional head coach in like the three major sports would do something like this that we think are an all-time great? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Sappy Joe Espada. You can't spell sap without, or you can't spell Espada without sap, Joe. 713-780-3776.
Right.
Go watch this video the Astros posted. Joe Espada calling up Cam Smith, making his debut, making the roster. It's a cool moment. A cool moment for Cam. Cool moment for his family. I question doing it in front of the entire club. I question do it publicly. I question then posting it on social media within 30 minutes. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Jack, you're in the Hive. What's up, Jack?
Hey, guys, man, listen to you guys every day. Enjoy the show. I want to comment on the Cam Smith deal. And, Jeremy, I'd like to ask you another question, if you could let Coug Nation know who may be returning. But and as far as Cam goes, you got to remember, George Spott is not one of the mainstream coaches in baseball. He just got his first chance last year. I think at best he was a bench coach or a minor league coach. So I don't have any problem with what transpired in the clubhouse. Rather, the only thing I got to take on this, if this young man is what everybody think he's going to be, probably in 7 years he's going to be leaving us for a big contract. So that's all I got to say about that. But Jeremy, if you could let Coug Nation know who may be returning, I appreciate it.
You got it.
No,
delete that.
I'm
not privy to that stuff, Jack. I'm really not. I stay out of that. I kind of keep my blinders on. Like, I don't want to irritate anybody. I know my role when it comes to Houston Cougar basketball. I show up, I call the games, and I try to do a good job. As far as who's returning, I really have no clue. Juwan Roberts gone, obviously. Javier France is gone. No more eligibility. Malik Wilson's final year. You're probably alluding to like Uzan and Tugler, who are fringe draft guys. They'll have a decision to make. But I know that Kelvin Sampson will have a good team. Like he'll have a good roster on the floor again next year. But I'm not thinking about next year right now, Jack. I'm thinking about Friday night at 10 o'clock
Eastern
when the Houston Cougars take on Purdue. 10 o'clock. Well, yeah, 10 o'clock for me. I'm in the Eastern time zone.
Yeah, but everyone that's watching the game here is in Central time.
That's a good point. Yeah, 9 Central, 10 Eastern. That's why I was late to the show today, Jack. I was traveling up with the team, but sorry, I was late. And you had to get stuck with Joe and Brian for 45 minutes.
I just assumed you didn't realize what time it was.
Forgot. And I was traveling. I was doing some work. Watch the video again, and DeZinzo is clearly like, what? TF. Yeah, go watch the video for the first 40 seconds. Just watch the other players in the room. It is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Just watching everybody else. So, like, what other coaches professionally would do this? Like, you think Bill Belichick's doing this?
No. Well,
do you think Dusty Baker's doing this?
No.
Do you think Ime Udoka is doing this?
Definitely not.
Do you think D'Amico Ryans is doing this?
Probably not.
D'Amico's the best chance of those guys that I mentioned.
Yeah.
But I don't think D'Amico is doing this. Like, is Bobby Cox doing this?
No.
Who are the greats? Tommy Lasorda doing this? None of these guys are doing this. Is Steve Kerr might do it. Who are the best NFL coaches right now?
Yeah,
Is Andy Reid going to fake a phone call to the mother who's in the hallway? I don't think so. This is kind of cringe. Kind of, and look, it means nothing, right? It means nothing for the team, their win total. It means nothing for Cam Smith's trajectory and his production. I'm just pointing out the cringe. I'm just pointing out the cringe here.
Yeah, Abraham, I think, like, if I was going to bet on who would do this, just based on how cringy and things they've been in the past, and to further your point of why it doesn't matter, I feel like Nick Sirianni would be towards the top of my list, just how awkward he is. Jonathan Gannon.
Sirianni's too much of a hardo to do this.
Yeah, you need somebody.
He's going to cut somebody out before he calls somebody's mother.
I want to be careful how I word this, but I think you need someone on the softer side, I guess.
LeBron should have done it for Bronny when he got his first.
I bet you J.J. Redick would do this then.
Jim Harbaugh or Pete Carroll may do it, says Keith.
I can see Harbaugh doing it.
Jim, not know,
Jim.
Man.
Yeah, Jim, not John. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, he's weird, but he's not, like, soft.
No, he's not soft, but I think he's also into this feels like a take that I'm not trying to give, but he's into more the emotional side. Like, he's willing to openly talk about the emotions of it. And like, I mean, you see him before games, the way he slaps, you know, Justin Herbert around trying to get everyone pumped up. I could see him leaning into the emotions of
like,
the moment.
In 2 years, or whatever it is, do we think that the New Orleans Saints are going to have a family member call in for Arch when he's named
no.
the starting quarterback?
No. Because it'll be a foregone conclusion. Like,
no. Like, I think we saw something in professional sports yesterday that is extremely rare. Extremely rare. And it kind of bothers me. It kind of bothers me.
Why?
Because, like, I know what goes on behind the scenes. So, like, what is, like, who planned for this to be on Twitter and who planned for the production of this? So, like, you have to produce this, right? Like, it's basically a show. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what kind of bothers me.
It's Joe's
like,
idea.
You're bringing in production and fiction into the clubhouse. Like if you wanted to film him and his family, like, getting the news together, like, filming, like, to me, I wouldn't even want that filmed in public. Filmed, yes, but blasted on social, no. Like, that's my moment with my family to share with them. That shouldn't be you making the decision if that's blasted on social. It shouldn't be the Astros' decision if that's blasted on social. If I had a signature moment in my life, I would want that privately with my family. And I don't think I'd want it out on social. But if it was on social, it would be me making that decision. So they made this a spectacle. They made this like Cam. This is Cam Smith's moment. Which, by the way, you're bringing in other people that you're cutting or demoting into that moment to make the moment for Cam Smith. Which, okay, like, I see what you're doing there, but that's Cam Smith's moment. That's not yours. Mm-hmm. So, one, who's making that call? Two, who's putting it on social? Three, is this Joe Espada worried about this stuff instead of ball? You see what I'm saying here?
I do.
Like, this is this is a lot of behind the curtain stuff that a manager shouldn't be worrying about.
I do see what you're saying. Like, I don't really disagree with you. I think in general, like, it's very strange. I don't know if it means anything.
There's a very good chance it does not. But I also think that there is a decent chance where the players are looking at him like, who is managing us?
I do think that if Joe Espada gets fired in the next 3 years, that we will look back at this moment and a lot of people will point to it. People that might be listening to this conversation right now and in their minds, in their cars, saying, Jeremy, this is the stupidest thing you've ever talked a segment about. But if Espada gets fired at some point, people will look back to this and be like, should have known then he wasn't a fit.
And I'm still really on the fence with Espada. Like, I'm collecting information on Espada still. And that's why I'm kind of like, how am I leaning here? Like, I want to really like him. Mm-hmm. I want to call him the most interesting manager in the world. We had a night at J-Bar M together one night. He was sitting from across the room. I was hosting the Kelvin Sampson show, and he was there watching it. Came up and shook Coach's hand, all that. Like, I really want to like him. And I think he did a pretty good job last year, like, after the struggles they had at the start of the season to, like, regroup and you know, get to the postseason, I thought was admirable. Now, you can point to the start and be like, what was up with that? Like, you can easily point to the start and be like, what was going on there? You didn't have them ready to go. And, yeah, they had injuries and all of that stuff. But we also had the report last year whenever they were struggling of, like, you know, the guys are kind of wondering about him. The guys might not like him a whole lot. So I'm still on the fence here. And then you see a spot of, like, how he, like, interjected with managers last year or umpires last year where he's kind of tentative. He's kind of passive. He's kind of soft, like, he has his hand over his mouth. It's like, okay, like, is that the alpha? Is that the leader of the squad? Like, is this the dude that's guiding us into battle? And then, like, this year, I go back to the FanFest thing where he was sitting down with Salisbury, and Salisbury's like, you need to be more animated this year. And Espada's like, yeah, you know, I do need to be like that. You're going to see more of that this year. And it's like, dude, what? You're the manager. Like, you should either A, already be doing that, or B, like, you don't let a quarterback football player tell you how you need to act on a baseball diamond. And you're like, yeah, yeah, we're going to do more of that this year. So it's kind of like he's a little insecure, like not comfortable with who he was last year and wants to kind of change his demeanor this year. But if you're changing your demeanor, what really are you? Like, it's kind of posturing.
Yeah.
No, and then, I mean, like, this, and then, like, you see him, like, the social media, like, and then yesterday, like, whose idea was that? Whose idea was that? And then, secondly, if that's a problem, that's a problem. Like, I hope it wasn't his idea and it was the social media manager's idea, but even if it's a social media manager's idea, you're going to allow that?
Yeah. And I don't know, knowing, like, the PR staff like I do, like, I don't think it's their idea. My biggest thing with Joe Espada, my biggest issue with him is he spent the entire offseason telling people at FanFest, telling Chandler Rome on his podcast, all these people, that this team is going to be more patient this year. They're going to take more pitches. They're going to have a different approach. And I go, why did it take so long to get there when it was obvious last year that was the problem? That's my issue with Joe Espada. This is like, this is further down the list. It's just awkward.
That's in my information gathering. This is the stuff I've gathered and why it's tough for me to really get on board with Joe right now. Like, I'm probably more off of the Espada train than on the Espada train, and I really was trying to make Fetch happen. And look, I could easily, like, they go start the year 10-0. I'm all in. I'm a waffler. We all know that. I'm all in if they start the year 10-0. But it just doesn't seem like he has conviction and he's very sure of himself. And it feels like there's a lot of this year where he's trying to compensate for what he didn't like about himself last season. Which, again, if you're trying to do that, where's the confidence? Where's the leader of men? Where is the alpha? I'm just telling you my observation. 713-780-3776. Text line has some thoughts or two. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Houston's independent voice for sports, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.